I want to talk about cameras today. Can we talk about cameras?
Sure. You have new ones, unlike me.
Yeah, exactly. I have the new iPhone 11 Pro, and this is definitely the iPhone update that is the most centered around the cameras that has happened so far. And it seems like that's the messaging that the general public is getting. A few people have come up to me, and when they've seen the three camera back of the iPhone 11 Pro, which, by the way, man, these names, dude, these names are getting bad.
Better than last year.
That's okay. So, yes, I actually was trying to remember what the last year's was, like just last week. I couldn't remember the 10R. I was like, the 10 Pro and the non-Pro 10? Like, it's just, but this is my problem, is every year it's like not only not great, but it's different every time. And it's getting annoying to me. In any case, I have the iPhone 11 Pro. It has three cameras on the back. People have said, oh, that's the new iPhone. That's the one with like the way better cameras, right? And I don't think they're just saying that because they see the three camera lenses on the back. I think it's because that's what people understand about the iPhone 11, is this one's the one with the really good camera. And I have to say, John, I freaking agree with him. This is the iPhone with the really good camera. Like, it's not, you know, so world-shatteringly different from the iPhone X and the XS, but it's a really, really good system that seems to have figured out ways to make photos better for the general public, and I think that's a really cool thing. Are you on the fence at all about upgrading? Where are you at with all this?
I'm pretty sure I'm going to do it. I just don't know when. And I'm going to do it like I've never done it before. I'm going to go into the store and I'm going to handle the max. I mean, I know what the front of the 11 Pro is going to be like, but I want to see if the max is for me, and I want to like build them both out because they're both significantly, I mean, even the Pro is significantly heavier than the XS, and I want to make sure that's cool. But if it works out, then I'm going to upgrade. And right. The camera is the reason why. The only reason why. That's not true. The battery is actually the more important reason, and the camera is the second reason.
I want to move this conversation into like a philosophical space, as we are wont to do. But I do want to say the battery life is really good. My phone is currently at 60%, and I've been using it all day. And I'm like the heaviest of the iPhone users, right? My phone would have been dead at 11 a.m. In the past, and it is right now, almost 5 p.m. my time. So that's a huge, huge difference.
Yeah, my iPhone XS is at 34%, and I've charged it like five times
today. Yeah, typically I am always like bringing a charger with me, and I'm just now recognizing that I just didn't do that today. I didn't even think about it, so... very different. I think I have charged it a little bit, but nowhere near like I have in the past. So in any case, I kind of consider myself to be the closest to a photographer as one can get without becoming a full-fledged photographer, if that makes sense.
What does that mean? Doesn't make any sense.
Okay, well, I am not a professional photographer. Like, I don't charge people money for my photographs in the typical sense. But I am a photographer. I'm not trying to be like, oh, I'm not a good enough. I am a good photographer, and I care about photographs, and I know a lot about photography. I just don't happen to be a professional photographer that does that as like the primary thing I do in my life.
Gotcha.
I am a person who has a Leica that is a many thousands of dollars camera that I carry around a lot of my life and take good photos with. So I am a photographer. And this iPhone is, I think, my favorite camera I've ever had, more than an actual very good, extremely expensive camera. And it's, of course, nowhere near as good as that camera is, but I just took a trip to Lake Tahoe and didn't bring any camera with me besides the iPhone. And I have zero regrets about it. And I think that's maybe the first time in my life that that's ever happened. And to me, this is the promise of the iPhone as a camera for the everyday average person. And I think it's really incredible to see, after many, many years, the camera really coming into a place where it can hold its own against a typical DSLR or a typical camera system. And I'm really excited about what that means. And you have been someone who's really just used the iPhone as your primary camera for a good while now, right?
Yeah, I've actually had a Sony point and shoot. I can't remember the model off the top of my head.
Well, it's because it's a Sony and it's always crazy.
Yeah, right. It's like DX9311P blue.
Yeah.
I don't remember. It's actually a fairly short name. It's the black one. It's like a matte black. Like it has a surprisingly big like zoom lens on the front for what it is. It's one that that came recommended to me, and I actually did bring that on a pretty big, actually to a festival earlier this year, and shoot just with that, and it was super fun, and the pictures turned out way better than they would have on my phone. But for the most part, I mean, like 99% of the time, the phone's all I've got with me.
Do you think that there was a moment in your history as an iPhone user where it shifted from, I definitely also need to bring a camera with me, to this is good enough? Because I feel like it was actually a while ago.
I never brought a camera with me. Like I wasn't really a photographer until I had an iPhone.
Interesting.
But I really took with the phone, right away. And I decided that like taking pictures was something that I wanted to do recreationally, very quickly. And, I guess Facebook was probably the first place I was. Well, no, actually, now that I think about it, I did a few like expeditions with a terrible point and shoot digital camera that I don't remember at all, even what brand it was, in college. And so there are like some photo albums from college that are mostly like documentary. They're mostly pictures of crazy stuff we were doing on a given night and they're all out of focus and, you know, ridiculous, but they really do capture the essence of what was going on. And so at that time I felt like I was creating something. I was like doing something artistic, but that was a very rare occasion. And it wasn't until I had an iPhone 4 in my pocket that I was taking pictures every day. I definitely think that social media was the incentive structure for taking more pictures, and probably had more than I would like to do with how I like tuned my eye for photography, because I think that I was taking a lot of like-based feedback and sort of fishing for that at a very early informative stage, particularly when Instagram came around. But it was, yeah, it was always integral to what I was doing with photos, to have it be like integrated with software in my pocket.
Right. I have a very clear memory of the first time that I really thought about the iPhone as a camera. And it very well might have been the first iPhone I had, because I skipped the first year. The iPhone 3G was the second iPhone ever, right? Yes. So that was the first iPhone that I had. And I began taking photos specifically for a Tumblr blog for all of my friends. And well, you know, the funny thing about Tumblr, as we discussed recently, is that it still exists, because Tumblr is one of the only things that actually like fulfills that promise of being there 10 years later, or however long it's been since I took those photos. But all of the photos that I posted on that blog, I made black and white, because the camera on the iPhone 3G was not very great. And a lot of the photos I was taking were in dim or dark environments, and they just looked muddy and washed out and not awesome. So I had to make them all black and white. And that became like an aesthetic for the blog that I felt fine about. But whenever there was something that I actually had to do, like actually wanted really good photos for, I would pull out an actual DSLR. And this was more of a art project in a sense. And I guess that's kind of how I viewed it for a long time, is there are cameras that I actually have to lug around, that actually take a lot of time, that require me to edit those photos, but the photos that come out are incredible. And then there's this iPhone camera, and it requires very little of me, or really nothing of me, but the photos aren't that great. But man, I can literally just pull out my phone and take a photo immediately, and it's done. So there are these two different types of scenarios in which I would take a photo. And it comes as no surprise to anybody that that's no longer the case, and it hasn't been the case for a little while now. But it's getting so good that I'm starting to wonder not do I need to bring my quote unquote actual camera? But why would I bring my camera is becoming the way that I'm thinking about it. Is there something very specific that I'm trying to accomplish that the camera would be good for? And if I can't think of that, I don't really have any reason to bring it anymore.
I mean, it's that camera's not doing machine learning on 9 frames extracted when you push the button and like
right.
composing the best possible image for the situation from all of that data on the fly. Like, it's not going to be able to. I was discussing the new phones with my friend John Curley, who's an amazing photographer with a journalism background, and then sort of became the main reporter and photographer for the Burning Man event in an unofficial capacity. And he also like shot my wedding. He shot every wedding for every Burning Man staff member. He's quite a gearhead, and he takes photos in really crazy conditions all the time. And he was really excited about the upgrade. And talking to him about the news of the iPhone 11 Pro, the thing that occurred to me to say, and he was already on board, like he didn't need to be convinced, but the thing that occurred to me was that you can take a photo in the dark with 3 seconds of exposure with no tripod with this thing and like get a clear, beautiful image out of it. And like and if you have a tripod, it automatically detects that you're using a tripod and gets an even better image out of it. It's a supercomputer. Like there's no way that camera manufacturers are ever going to catch up with that. So, you know, maybe there will be a world where big glass, you know, like optics are something that you need in extreme situations, and machine learning is something you need in other situations. But like, maybe it's just as likely that big camera lenses will become iPhone peripherals.
Right.
Like bigger sensors and bigger lenses that are plugged into your phone, and your phone is driving the camera. Like that, this computational photography thing, there's no putting the genie back in the bottle on that. And I can imagine purist arguments that, you know, people are uncomfortable with the computer making the image for you. But I think there's no argument that to be made that like there was no technological intermediary between you and the image, you know, before computers got involved, right? So it's, you know, it's all a technical medium. The question is, which is the one that can most reliably, accurately, and naturally translate your intention into the image that you've captured, right? And the thing that you're pointing out, that like this is becoming a medium that is accessible to everyone now, not just technically skilled photographers, like that has everything to do with this machine learning, this computational photography, because the phone knows how to be a good photographer. You just need to see what you want to see and press the capture button.
Yeah. And I mean, by the way, for anybody who feels as if they still need to be in control, that's why apps like Halide exist.
Yeah.
Right. So that you can take the photo the way that you want to with these lenses. But for most people, they have no interest in doing so. I think that the thing that this makes me realize is I talk with a lot of people about how the iPhone isn't the perfect, most amazing camera of all time. And like, there was somebody that I talked to today. He's a professional photographer and filmographer, and he got the new iPhone 11, and he was excited about it, but he was kind of like self-deprecatingly joking about it, saying, everyone else seems to be taking really good photos with this, but mine don't feel perfect. He still saw the iPhone camera-ness in the iPhone photos that he was taking. And I think that that is totally true and like a fair point. I see photos and I can recognize them as iPhone photos or DSLR photos or mirrorless photos or whatever it might be. But I think the thing that we don't often consider is that we're only seeing the very best of the professional DSLR photos as well. You know, I have taken plenty of photos with my Leica that are garbage, because I didn't have the right lighting or the right atmosphere or whatever I was looking for. And often I get that really, really good photo by meticulously editing it over a long period of time in Lightroom and going through a lot of work to get that photo to the level that I want it to. So the thing that excites me about the iPhone as a camera and the iPhone 11 Pro as a camera specifically is because it's starting to become clear to me that all of the fiddling that I don't like having to do with photos is slowly but surely going away and getting replaced by something better. And the quality is still very clearly not as good as the other cameras, but I'm starting to see massive gains in what I'm just getting by pointing and shooting that I could never get with any camera, no matter what. And I think what it's making me realize is we talked a very long time ago on the show about how the iPad was like my platonic ideal of a computer before the iPad existed. I wanted that. Oh, I always forget the name of it. That MacBook Pro that was a touchscreen thing that like everybody was in love with. Like what was, oh, ModBook. That was the thing. We talked about it. It was just this touchscreen aftermarket third-party version of a MacBook.
So, oh, right, right, right. The aftermarket one.
That I wanted so badly as a high school student because I was like, I want to touch the screen. And then the iPad comes out and I say, oh, yeah, like that's exactly what I wanted to do, but way better because it's actually made to do these things. And in the same way that the iPad is the thing that I wanted before I knew what I wanted, I feel like the iPhone camera is becoming the camera that I wanted before I knew what I wanted. If you would have asked me to design some perfect, amazing camera, I think I would have made something that looked like that weird light camera that everyone pointed to when the iPhone 11 Pro came out. Did you see that? It was the camera that has like 50 lenses on the back of it.
No, I haven't seen that. Sounds terrifying.
Yeah, it's like, you know, this very Silicon Valley-y reinvention of the camera. And in a way, it is not that much more than a mobile phone with a bunch of lenses slapped onto it. But it's trying to do that type of computational photography. And we're going to take photos with a bunch of lenses at the same time and this and that. And you'll have all the lenses with you. It's all pocketable. But like, that's not actually what I want. What I want is a camera that I can pull out of my pocket and it will basically immediately know what I'm trying to do and will give me a couple of options to capture things differently that all feel very clear. I didn't really understand the appeal of having a wide-angle lens on the camera until I was trying to capture the insane glory of the mountains of Lake Tahoe, and I realized that the 1X camera couldn't capture it. And then I pull back to the wide angle and all of a sudden there's so much more in the frame. And being able to switch between these things on the fly and having them all feel very much harmonious is way more powerful than I thought it would be. And certainly more impressive with three cameras than it was with two, because the difference between 0.5 and 2X is so much bigger than just a 1X and 2X difference.
And they didn't have the switching between the lenses dialed last year the way they do now.
You know,
like you could see the transition and the white balance would be different, or like it wasn't smooth. And particularly, you know, if you were shooting video, if you wanted to zoom in to, you know, 2X while shooting video, it would cause this awful transition. And that doesn't happen anymore. And that's the kind of stuff that I don't think anybody's going to be able to catch Apple at least for a while, until it's something that like all commodity camera systems can do. I mean, we'll see how the next Pixel responds, but I mean, that kind of control to like have those lenses all ready to go, you know, adjusting themselves as the one that you're using is adjusted so that you can switch seamlessly. Like that's like classical Apple attention to detail.
I was talking with Drew Brinig about this today, actually, on Twitter. He was giving people suggestions on how to shoot kids with the iPhone 11 because they are hard subjects to photograph sometimes.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah, and we were talking about the telephoto lens, and he said that, you know, the reality is that there's two options for having a telephoto on a camera like this. You can either have its own very specific characteristics, or you can make it match the normal lens as much as possible. And Apple chose the latter. And he wasn't sure if that was the right decision, but to me it makes total sense because you're not trying to switch between three different things that all have very different feels. You're really just changing your perspective, but you're getting the same type of quality with any photo that you take, no matter which lens you choose. I typically shoot with prime lenses when I use cameras, which means that there's no zoom on the lens. Mm-hmm. It just is fixed as to whatever the magnification is. And basically, I always carry just two extremely different lenses, whether that's a 28 millimeter and a 75 millimeter or whatever it is. And switching between the two on a camera body produces such wildly different results that sometimes it's kind of confusing which one you should actually use, or it's challenging to understand which one you should use because you're going to get something so different from what your eye is seeing. And I think what Apple is trying to do with the iPhone camera is create something that is very similar to what your eye is seeing, no matter what perspective it gives you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the right choice for most people. And I think it's the right choice for me as somebody who is trying to take more artistic shots or, you know, specific things. I like the way that it always feels like a facsimile of what I'm seeing with my eye.
Yeah, that's definitely the right choice for me as well, because I'm only taking pictures really to be revisited on screens at a later time. You know, like it's, I really think of the pictures that I take with my phone as documents of whatever is happening to me to be, you know, revisited in exactly the way that I'm experiencing them now. I'm not printing things out. I'm not blowing them up. I don't have very technical needs for what these pictures are going to do eventually. I just want to make sure that the fidelity of what I'm seeing and remembering is as true as possible, so that when I browse through them later or decide to collect them into an album, which is going to be a digital album viewed on the same screen I shot them on, that they look just the way I remembered. And I think that that points to the other side of the real software work that Apple's putting into Photos right now. I've never used Google Photos, but I believe reports that it has been ahead of where Apple is as far as intelligently drawing from your archive of photos to show you the things that you want to see and like picking the best shots and intelligently organizing them. But I think that this is the year that Apple's catching up. And, you know, I still haven't used iOS 13 yet. Tomorrow's the day as we record this. But that I still think back to the demo from WWDC of the guy on the Photos team who was showing the how the Memories feature works. And even just that interface of how to browse through Memories in photo and video form, it had the same kind of quality of just being very true to the mental experience of remembering those things. In the same way that the interface of the camera and the results of the camera are very true to the experience of seeing those things for the first time. And I think that that's just, you know, Apple's human-centric design philosophy kind of playing out on both ends, that like what they're trying to do is artificially extend the natural capacities of the human mind to behold things and to recall those things once they have been beheld. And all of this is the photography pipeline, you know, because to get back into the technical side of the conversation, editing is also a highly technical skill. And like the difference between an amateur person's photo library and a professional person's photo library is that the former is full of unusable garbage that may even discourage you from looking at your photos. If you're not meticulous about editing as you go, or as you shoot, that'll happen to all of us on our phones where it's so easy to take limitless pictures. And I think Apple is trying to solve that problem by making us not have to think about it as well. And that encourages you to take more pictures and not worry about how good they are.
Hi, Internet friends. It's John here. Internet Friends is brought to you by my work at Ablaze Interactions, where I solve communication problems for clients who work to repair our world. I can help with information architecture to transform your website, content strategy to tell the right story and reach the right audience, and writing and editing to find the authentic voice of your company or organization, your product, or your idea. Ablaze Interactions has consulted for world-renowned events, political candidates, law firms, nonprofits, and great apps on the App Store. Light up your ideas. Go to ablaze.co and let me know if you're interested in working together.
I still feel like we're missing the sharing aspect of this.
Yeah.
I really do. Even being with some friends in Tahoe this weekend, I mean, we were just constantly airdropping people things. And I think you have some secret sauce that I don't think most people know about. You have like streams that you share with your family or something.
Yeah,
I don't even know how to do that. I don't even know what that is, to be honest.
So the
which
thing
is maybe weird. Maybe
it's an amazing feature, and I actually know a lot of people who are using it. But the thing that's really annoying is that it's completely, utterly separate logic from the local albums. Like, it's a separate tab. It works differently. When you create an album on your own library of your own photos, it works exactly the way you expect it to. You can add and remove photos to your heart's content. You can rearrange them however you want. But shared albums are actually, they're not called shared albums. They're called shared photo streams. And it's the same technology that the original syncing service in the Photos app had, which was called Photo Stream, which is just like an uneditable feed of photos in the order that you took them. And they they can be removed, but that's, you know, you can't rearrange them. And so, you know, the tricky thing about shared photo streams is that you just put things in there as you get ready to put them in there. And people get notified every time you upload stuff. So if you batch upload something, it'll say so-and-so added 37 photos. But if you add your photos at some point and then your wife adds photos 8 hours later and you've already, you know, gone somewhere else and done something else, like, those photos are going to be out of order. And that's just the way it goes. So it's not really a shared photo album, and it is not an ideal experience, especially compared to like a shared Facebook album. So I'm not sure if what Apple intends. I mean, they do surface these shared photo streams as though they are like shared memories of some kind. So I guess they do think of them as final products, but it may be better used as just sort of like a highlight reel of a bunch of photos that everybody took together. But I mean, it's confusing because you can have multiple people contribute to them. Actually, there's just a binary option. It's either the creator is the only person who can upload, or everyone on the photo stream can upload. So it's basically just a big dump of shared photos. It's still very easy to put photos in there, and you know, you get notified when you see them. So it works, but it's not necessarily any better than the kind of temporary album it creates if you send a group iMessage of a bunch of photos,
right?
Except that it's not temporary and you can still add to it later. But you know, I don't know what the ultimate destination of these photos is supposed to be, except that like the shared album of like our wedding and our honeymoon and a few other things like that, that is where I go when I want to look at those pictures. I don't go to my local library, but I wish the photos were in order in all cases. So hopefully they'll figure out how to add that in retroactively. That whole, like, it's not totally done on Apple's platform.
And there's some people trying to solve this forever. Wasn't it Circle? Wasn't that like the big one that first tried to do this a long time ago?
I only have a vaguest memory.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah.
However much money they spent on circle.com.
Yeah.
And it's already a forgotten, distant memory in our minds. But I mean, just people trying to share photos with each other is still not a solved problem, weirdly enough, in my opinion. It seems like you're crushing it with Apple's implementation. But like, I actually was just looking at my phone and I don't know how to do it. Like, I'm assuming that I create a new album and then I share it with people. Is that what I do?
No, you just select photos and then you hit
share. Add to shared album.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, but there's a shared album thing. Yeah, okay. So
it's I mean, it's got comments, it's got likes. It's really kind of interesting that Apple built that stuff.
This couldn't have been better timing. As we were talking about this, my wife texts me, "Can you send me those photos that you took of me and my friend?" Literally right now. And I mean, having a shared stream between the three of us doesn't even cross her mind. She just thinks, airdrop them to me whenever you get the chance. That's the only way to do it, you know?
Yeah. But like, people want them in their own libraries too. Like, that's the problem. There's no concept of a shared photo library on Apple's platform. And that's actually arguably the most important thing. Like, I wouldn't have to do shared photo streams with my wife if we had a shared photo library where all of the pictures we took were put in and then, you know, sorted automatically by date, you know, as they would be, just like they are with just one person shooting. What it should be is that iCloud families should have a shared photo library, and the regular photo albums in that library would be shared.
Instead, I'm currently airdropping photos to my wife right now. Which, by the way, I'm doing it from the second floor of my house, and she's on the first floor. I'm kind of impressed that it worked.
I think it uses Wi-Fi if they're on the network. I think that's how that works.
So every year that an iPhone comes out, one of the main reasons for me to upgrade is the camera. But the last few, I think I have been less positive that I was actually going to get something substantial out of that update. The XS to be sure, felt that way. It was like, this is a better camera, so I'm going to do it. But it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. And as they began to focus on portrait mode, you know, I thought, this is cool, but I don't really like portrait mode that much. This isn't the feature that I'm going to find myself using. I'm sure it's good for other people, but it's not good for me. And this is the first phone upgrade in a good while that made it very clear to me from the get-go that it was going to significantly improve the quality of my ability to capture photos and video. I mean, it's incredible for video, which I really love. And I think that excites me. And I'm curious to know what's next. But I think that I don't really care about that as much as I typically do. I'm really satisfied with this camera upgrade, and I'm very excited about the kinds of photos and videos that I can potentially take with it. And it's the first time I felt that way in a while. I haven't felt that way for like professional camera gear in years. I haven't really been following the news of upgrades in more traditional photography systems because it just doesn't seem that interesting anymore. It seems like the gains have really slowed down to a trickle. And this iPhone was that first reminder that I could get really excited about, you know, a new camera system.
Yeah. I mean, the phones are never going to get the kind of like barrel depth that you would need to really compete. You know, you're not going to have some big thing sticking many inches out of it. So, you know, it's the hardware is kind of getting to good enough to be sure. But like, the software could keep going and going and going. Like, who even knows what they're capable of? And like, maybe there will be more lenses. I don't know. But the, you know, it's what's clear this year is that Apple is repositioning the iPhone, that it's not really being treated as the most important device anymore. It's being specialized for like media production. You know, you're not going to do that with your watch. So it feels deserved. Like this year is the, you know, the iPhone really needed this. I can't help the feeling that there was like a little bit of gaslighting around the 10 class cameras. I don't doubt that they were better than like the 7 plus camera or whatever, or even the 8 plus that came out at the same time. I never had any of those, but the side-by-side comparisons between especially the regular 10, but even the 10S, and the 11 Pro are probably the most shocking difference in image quality that a year over year improvement on the iPhone has ever had. Especially in like the conditions, you know, in the low light conditions and stuff like that. But like even medium light conditions, like I take photos inside during the daytime with my 10S that are unacceptably bad. To me, you know, like it just feels like there's enough light in there, and like I'm not a experienced non-phone photographer, so what do I know? But like, I'm disappointed by the images that I get pretty often with the 10S, and I feel like a lot of the march to get people to upgrade, especially if they had a 10, was like pure marketing magic, and I don't think that's the case this time. I think that if anything, Apple just kind of kept their pace, their like intensity around the camera pretty consistent with where it was, and just let the results speak for themselves. And now all of the reviews are just saying, well, that's the best camera I've ever seen in a phone before. So that's clearly where most of the work was put in this time. It'll be interesting to see what happens next time, because next year's iPhone is really important. Next year's iPhone is the 5G iPhone. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether they push everything forward or whether the new radios and the new bandwidth and stuff like that take most of the design precedence and engineering time. But, you know, clearly it's still going to improve. And, you know, I feel like we don't even really do that good of a job as a community projecting what kinds of software improvements to the camera Apple's going to figure out. I mean, we knew night mode was coming because they're 2 years behind on it. But, you know, the other stuff, the way when they would describe, you know, how the, you know, the sensor, like when the sensor is capturing images and then how a bunch of captured like frames are linked together, like that kind of stuff is just like genius level. Like, you know, we're not going to be able to imagine what Apple's going to do with that, but we're going to be able to get instantly what it means. when they show us the results every time, I think, for the most part. I mean, I'm still not sure I understand what deep fusion actually is, that any of this other stuff either. Isn't. but, you know, I get the idea that it's like about extracting shapes and like image stuff, like pieces of the image from the frame. It's not just about light and color and the basic physics of photography. It's like looking for patterns on fabric and matching that up over the course of frames, and like making sure that even at very different exposure levels, like those, that texture is like real. You know, that's sort of what I think they're saying. And like, who even knows what it's going to be possible to train machine learning models on in the next few years.
Well, that's an interesting way of describing why that feature is important to me. And I think it's what I'm really wanting to talk about when we talk about cameras, because so much of our conversations in general, not you and me, but in the world, about photography and cameras and this and that is like the most technological type of conversation possible about mm-hmm. the specs and the details and what it can do and how it operates in low light and, you know, all of that stuff, which doesn't really matter to the normal person. That is not why they're taking photos. And the ability for an iPhone to take a picture that accurately represents a texture of a sweater is actually a remarkable thing for them to be going after, isn't it? Because the goal of photography for so many people is to capture a moment and let it be remembered forever. And the more realistic, the more lifelike, the more detailed we can make those pictures that we're casually snapping, right? Like the photo that my wife wanted was of her and her friend who's visiting in front of this mural in town. And I don't necessarily want that photo to be the most stylized artistic shot ever. I want it to be of my wife and her friend in front of a mural in town. And I want to be able to remember that in 30 years, 50 years. How cool would that be to be able to have this memory to look back on? The more it looks like the day I took it, I think the better it is at doing its job as a photograph.
There are just things about the scene that we've never really been able to get just with the kind of casual point and shoot and put it back in your pocket action that you do when you take a picture with your phone. And the software is going to do everything it can to compensate when the hardware can't do it. And it can do so much more than I was expecting for a 1 year improvement. Yeah. I mean, something I'm seeing a lot of, like on Twitter and places like that, that I've never seen before, with phone pictures is pictures of stars. And
yeah,
like I've taken pictures of the night sky with my phone over and over and over again, just like trying to get stars. Like I just hope that it'll work this time, and it never does.
Yeah. And you've been trying to take photos of the night sky is what you mean, right? Because it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't at all. And like it's starting to, you know, and it still looks like a phone took it, but it's like there's so much more night there than I have ever mm-hmm. seen in a phone picture. And like, that's the kind of thing that I wonder, you know, I wonder if that's sort of what follows after textures of fabric, you know, is like people take pictures of the night sky, people take pictures of sunsets, people take pictures of beautiful things that are very hard to take pictures of. And I wonder if Apple's going to be able to intelligently detect and sort of specialize certain algorithms on improving those kinds of pictures. And you know, like there's such crazy things they could do with the night sky, for example, because like I'm thinking of the apps on my phone that use the phone's gyroscope and GPS to do an AR star map in the sky. And like it's a virtual image, but they can pretty accurately overlay, you know, what the stars and constellations and stuff like that are on the actual sky in real time using the position of the phone. And like, what if the camera could use that kind of data to, you know, know where in the image the stars are going to be so that they can, you know, adjust those few pixels just to sort of help bring it out, you know, who knows. But even just the idea that like it knows it's night and it knows it's pointing up. So, you know, like do something different to capture those little tiny pricks of light from so far away. That's going to get more pictures closer to like a real capture of what's of what people are really seeing up there than any amount of high-end camera technology ever could, because of how vanishingly small the number of people is that's going to be able to use that stuff to get those images.
Hello, internet friends. It's Drew, and I want to tell you about Keyhouse. There's a quote from Kurt Vonnegut that I read, tucked away in an essay he wrote about the seasons, where he said that he thought that the idea of four seasons was a lie. Instead, we should have six. Fall doesn't move to winter, and winter doesn't move to spring. Instead, he thought the season should be like so. Summer, fall, locking, winter, unlocking, and spring. I believe there's a beautiful poetry to the idea that creation itself requires a time of unlocking before anything of substance can bloom. And perhaps you're listening to this message right now, stuck between what you're doing and what you want to do for the rest of your life, realizing that you might be in that cruel season of unlocking too. Find your own space for unlocking. Go to Keyhouse, KEYHOU.SE, and let's find the key. This all makes me think of this research project that caught my attention over 10 years ago, I think, at this point, which was a Microsoft project where this guy developed and was wearing a camera around his neck at all times. Does that ring any bells to you?
I've heard of a few things like that. One of them, I don't remember who it is, but it was some of my friends from Portland who were into quantified self and like wearable stuff very early on, knew a guy who was sort of an elder statesman of that kind of stuff who was wearing a camera on him all the time. I wonder if it's the same.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know if anything ever came of it, like if it became something that you could buy and do yourself, but I think it was like life logging what it was
that's
called
exactly
then. And now it's called quantified self because that's a better name than life logging, or a more 2010s name than life logging in any case. But it was a camera that I think like captured different types of data. I don't know, except maybe there's an accelerometer in there or who knows what kind of data it was capturing. Right. Yeah. But in any case, the thing that it did was took a photo every minute of the day or something along those lines. So you just had this massive amount of photos of whatever you were looking at with your body, at the end of the day. And, you know, this was in the mid 2000s and it was a camera you wore on your neck at that time. So everything had this very webcam quality look to it, but it really caught my attention because there's something so significant about the idea of a camera that can just capture everything you do forever. Like that sounds cool to me. And that was sort of the promise of the GoPro in a vacation type of way in my mind. I know that it was, you know, as time went on, it got more and more specifically catered towards like sports and, you know, extreme things. But the idea, like I can take this camera and it's going to see what I see and I can just click record and it's going to record for a long time. And I don't have to look at a screen to make sure it's capturing something good. It's just going to capture stuff. And at the end of the day, I can look back at what it was and share it with people. And the problem that the GoPro had to me was that it still required so much of you. Like to get that stuff off of the GoPro and into your social sphere took a decent amount of work. And I don't even know what the heck the Microsoft life logging camera did. Who knows how you got that information off that little camera in the mid 2000s, right? Like, I don't even know if that was its intention.
That stuff was all just about analyzing it for patterns in the data. Like it wasn't really even getting the images.
Yeah. You have it forever for you and you can choose what you do with that data or whatever. And I mean, I know that I'm becoming a broken record, but it just is the thing that I care about. I care about sharing things. I want to make things to share things. And the iPhone 11 Pro is the closest I've ever gotten to a thing that makes me feel the same way that life logging camera did, in the sense that it truly does feel like these cameras are made for us to capture whatever we want to share with whoever we want to share it with and have it done immediately. And even with my like dig about how we can't really share photos, I mean, AirDrop works, right? And I was taking photos in Tahoe, and my friend was taking photos in Tahoe, and my wife was taking photos in Tahoe, and they were all magically on one another's phones in minutes or in seconds because of AirDrop, you know, sending them from one person to another. And I didn't have to worry about battery life because the battery is better. And I didn't have to worry about how to capture it because I just kept switching to the wide angle and knowing that everything would be in focus and everything would be in the shot. And it was momentous for me. And I don't really know how to describe it in words because I know that the camera is not that different from the iPhone X camera that I had just a week ago. But all of the pieces of the puzzle are like clicking into place in ways that have such a massive difference in whether or not I'm going to reach in my pocket and pull my phone out and start recording something. And there's just no way to quantify how important and powerful that is.
Yeah. I'd like to see them do this with microphones next. I mean, I realize that it's creepy to people, like microphones have crossed the creepy threshold for everyone. And that like the idea of having audio recording running all the time is like super upsetting. But, you know, I would do anything to have every conversation, just to have the security that like every conversation I'm having is being captured, and that after the fact, if I decide that was a pretty cool conversation, I could just go back and save it from the auto delete at the end of the day, you know, or whatever. And ideally it would go into some kind of library where and maybe I would be able to use Siri voice recognition to add a voice to my contacts so it would know who was talking. And then I would have an archive of conversations that I've had with people. And, you know, I mean, think about what that would do like to podcasting, for example, because like you would be able to just go into it with somebody and it would all be there, and you wouldn't have to go on the show later and be like, remember that conversation we were having the other day? The fact that it would all be there and, you know, ideally transcribed, ideally searchable, that's what makes me feel the way that this sounds like these cameras make you feel. Not that I'm not totally thrilled about the cameras, but like, I think it's another aspect of the same promise that like, I think this is what we're actually really getting at with the camera conversation, is we're moving past the idea of these kinds of recording devices as a technical practice, a technical skill, and towards something more like a prosthesis for the senses.
Yes.
That like makes the human experience into like a static memory, like an outboard memory of life. And of course it's more than that, because you can enhance it and you can make it into an art object, but that's part of the act of experiencing and remembering. And it is creative, inherently creative, inherently artistic to attend to your senses that way. And that's what the promise of the camera on the iPhone is that it's making everyone into a visual artist. And I don't think there's anything more Apple-y than that, for one thing, but like it's much deeper than that. It's not just about, you know, I'm like, this is true of every phone. This is true of every photo library service. Like, the tools are making us into artists telling a beautiful fictional story with a grain of truth in everything about our lives. And that's got way more potential for like the human spirit than a world full of expert craftspeople capturing our memories for us.
Your thoughts about voice recording, it makes me think about a book I read when I was a teenager. It was a book by Andy Warhol. And I say that because it was...
I know what you mean.
Yeah, it was a like culmination of a bunch of voice recordings that he did, because I guess he just carried a tape recorder in a pocket basically at all times in his life and always had it going. And then somebody had the job of, you know, going through all of those tapes and turning a bunch of the things that he said into a book. And I do remember, in the same way that I liked that life logging camera, I loved that idea of carrying a tape recorder around. And I am kind of frustrated at the state of recording your voice in 2019. So much so that I have actually thought on several occasions, it would just kind of be nice to have an actual tape recorder. Like, that feels dumb, but I would almost prefer that than having to fumble with a weird app on my phone that I don't know how to work and feels kind of clunky. And I feel like it's deleted a few things that I've tried to record, or, you know, I'm doing something wrong. Anyways, it doesn't matter. It's not the way that I want it to be. I'm, you know, talking to you right now with an AirPod in my ear. That's how I'm hearing you. And I do wish that I could just speak into the AirPod over the course of the day and it would record things that I want to record. And yes, you said exactly the thing that I think I've been trying to hit at and I've been struggling to really understand is I have never been interested in the idea of photography as something that I have to finesse and finesse and finesse to get the thing that I want. I would much rather have a prosthesis that is capturing something pretty similar to what I'm seeing and sharing it with the world or preserving it for future history. That is so cool. And like, that's what I felt like I experienced in Tahoe, was I feel like I captured video that was my hike through the woods. It wasn't photos from my hike through the woods. I captured my hike in the woods in a way that I haven't been able to do in the past. And the significance of that for me personally is massive. And will I be able to make like amazing feature film caliber type of stuff with it? I don't know. I don't think that the answer is no. One of my favorite films, Tangerine, was shot exclusively on iPhones, and this was years ago. But like, will I be doing that in my day-to-day? I don't know if that's what's going to happen. But will I do a better job of capturing the thing that I'm seeing in front of me? Yes. Like, without hesitation, yes. And the significance of that for me is hard to describe.
Dare I bring up how much cooler this is going to be once it's something we're wearing on our actual lives?
Yes, yes, I mean, please do.
I think that the thing we saw in the demos of the iPhone 11 Pro at the event was that Apple is all aboard on the idea of multiple video streams from multiple camera systems at a time. And I don't think that having cameras on our face obviates the need for having cameras in our hands. I feel like hands, they're a very good infrastructure for taking photo and video.
Yeah, my wife does not want a like goggle camera picture of her and her friend. You know, she wants a good photo. Right. So that's for the camera in my hands. Yeah, absolutely.
But then think about the hike situation. Like, think about what you could be doing. I mean, first of all, when you're hiking, you don't necessarily want to have something in your hands. But let's say you got to a beautiful waterfall. Let's say you had glasses on.
Let's say the thing that happened to me, which is I saw a bear.
Right.
Like, I saw a bear and all the capturing that I was doing immediately stopped because I saw a bear and it was incredible.
Right.
So I took a photo of it very quickly and then I ran away. But if I had glasses on my head, I could have got the whole thing.
Yeah. And so imagine like the concept of like a single recording session that works the way like a workout works, where like you press start and then all of the data that all of your connected devices capture is going into this session. And like, let's say it includes location data and elevation data and even like heart rate and stuff. Like, let's get it all. Let's capture the entire hike, everything about what you are doing on that hike, so that you can then later on in the video, like have a frame, like have like a picture in picture of where you are on the map and like see your heart rate spike when you see the bear. But like, I feel like a key element of recording that experience is going to be cameras rolling on your eyes at all times, so that as you're looking around, you're getting imagery of that. And then when you take out your phone and you start doing like the real shooting and like, you know, using your hands to maneuver the thing around and like get it into the exact right place, hold it still, you know, get exactly the shot you want. Like, you're going to have this B-roll of like you, your perspective, getting yourself in that situation. You're going to see your own camera in your hands in front of you as you get it lined up and like click the shutter. And then you get, then you're going to be able to switch to that other stream and like show the, you know, the perspective of like what you're getting in your super high quality, you know, handheld camera. Having all of that and having it all streamed together, it's going to enable a level of immersion that even the word video doesn't even really qualify. Like, what would you call that, a movie? Like, I don't know. If your head is capturing spatial data about where you're looking around, you could make that into a VR experience and like actually put a helmet on and go on that hike again, you know? So like the stuff that we've got now is leading very logically to a place where like even the understanding of what the media are that we're working in starts to break down.
Yeah, that's curious, because if all of this information can get turned into one piece of art, like that's a different type of art that we don't really have right now. And it's a different type of sharing that we don't really have right now. Right now, it feels like we're kind of limited in the ways that we can share with other people. But, you know, that's a really funny thing that you brought up, the heart rate. I just looked it up on my phone and yeah.
Can you see the bear?
Well, yes. I took a picture of the bear at 237, and you'll be shocked to see that my heart rate went from 150 beats at 236 to 197 at 238. So that's amazing.
The bear is in it. You captured the bear with your heart rate data.
Right.
You know, like that's, but I don't... Your camera did not get that aspect of the experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's, and as of right now, I mean, I guess I could share a screenshot of my heart rate, but that doesn't feel quite as potent as a future use case for all of this data harmoniously brought together and turned into something really significant, turned into something really special.
Yeah. I mean, how do you share an experience with someone from the inside? It's really hard to imagine. A lot of, at Burning Man, we got a lot of terrible VR pitches, like people wanting to bring big VR camera rigs to Black Rock City and like create, like capture the experience for somebody to go there who has never been there or could never go there. And like they were genuinely trying to be like empathetic in that concept. They were trying to share the experience with people who couldn't have it otherwise. And I just never bought it, because I felt like it would be like being inside of a bubble, you know, like floating in a spaceship through the experience. It wouldn't have anything to do with like actually being there, feeling the temperature, you know, and all of that stuff. But like the more data you have that like really describes the situation, is there a way to actually make that translatable? I feel like it's really far off to imagine, you know, a way, a medium where like the air pressure data that you record from your experience is going to like meaningfully improve the experience of watching your thing later. But this is, I mean, in the meantime, this is where the creative part comes in. It's just giving you more colors to paint with, really, that like it's, you have to make the editorial decisions about how to condense down all the stuff that you capture into something that's going to translate, something that's going to make sense. And like as maximalist of an idea as I've just constructed about like what going on a hike could be like in 10 years, it's obvious to me when I think about it that less is more sometimes too. I mean, like your four images were plenty to capture like what happened when you saw the bear, you know, particularly the last one of like blurry madness as you run away. That is enough to get the story across. And like, this is a strange analogy, but like, I've been a writer, nominally speaking, I've been a writer for my entire career. Like writing sentences has been the fundamental technical skill that I was using in all of these jobs at all these places. But like as the media improved, and not just, well, I mean, like obviously it's harder, it's weirder to think about the medium of the written word improving, especially on this short of a time scale, but like publishing, editing, you know, like you can get words up as you need to in a much more natural, fluid way than you could then. And I am including like tweeting them in that. Like as the tools have improved, as the resolution of the digital facsimile of the world that we live in has improved, writing has become a lot more like editing all the time, to the point where like I think I really do consider myself more of an editor now. Like that's, if you ask me like what is my job at Inside Apple, I would say that I'm the editor of it, even though like writing is what I'm doing. What I'm doing is I'm capturing a bunch of raw material and editing it down into something digestible. And so like I feel like writing becomes editing as the tools get better. And I think that that might be kind of a theorem for applying across the board here, right? Like photography becomes editing as the tools improve, and videography becomes editing because like you're getting more and more raw material and you're doing less and less work to capture that material, which would be like the act of writing it, and then extracting from that the meaningful part that you want to translate and deciding which part you want to share and which parts end up on the proverbial cutting room floor. That's editor's work. And like, that is what the human is for in all of this.